He makes us walk past the food.
Oh,
you can grab some of it if you like.
Here's the and I'll let y'all introduce yourself. These are representatives from Patterson Associates and all.
Yes, we're from Patterson Associates outside of outside of Austin. I'm Linda Patterson. Formed the firm back in 1994. And this is Justin Gard, one of our portfolio managers. As a matter of fact, Justin comes from a Lower Colorado River Authority. So I snatched him away from another River Authority. We have a few points to go through this morning. And hopefully, if you have any questions as I'm going through it, feel free to ask, or we can wait until the end, whichever suits you best. We have been, as I say, around since 1994. We're really excited. This is our 20th anniversary. And so we've grown a lot over those years. We were founded in 1994 as an independent firm, and we hold very strongly to that independence. That means independence from economists and brokers and financial advisors, so that we are always working only for our client. And that also allows us to have full reign of all of the brokers, all of the economists, and we feel that we can combine all that knowledge and bring it to our clients. We are a hub firm. We are woman-owned, always have been. We have had the same structure for 20 years, although the members of the team have changed a little bit over those years, and partners have come and gone. But we are certified by the state of Texas and the North Central COG. One of the things about the independence, and we emphasize this a great deal, is because I feel very strongly about it. I come from municipal work. 20 years in the, don't add those two together, please. 20 years in the city work with the city of Fort Lauderdale and the city of Fort Worth. And then I was your deputy state treasurer. So because of that background, when the firm was created, we focused on the public sector. I've never tried to do any other kind of investing. We don't do pension investing. We don't do insurance investing. We stick to the main market of all public entities, which is pretty much reflective in your investment policy. We've had steady growth over those 20 years, and starting from that first year, that actually the second year, we've been a profitable firm, but we're now up to $5.5 billion, which is a lot to say grace about. But because all of our clients are the same in five different states, we are always focused on the markets, the fixed income markets, the treasuries and the agencies that fit those. And also because we have extensive public experience, as I mentioned, Justin comes from Lower Colorado River Authority. Before then, he was a trust officer working with trust accounts and managing trust accounts for Wells Fargo. The rest of the team, we left back in Austin today. And as a matter of fact, we have another team member, but he's so new that we didn't have a picture of him, so I couldn't put it on. Of course, I've been in the firm since its initial conception. Justin has been with me about 6 years now. Chase is brand new to the firm. He's been with us and just joined us this year. And he comes from Raymond James, so he comes from the management and the brokerage side. And Ricky, who was still around and working with us when we were working with BRA years ago, is still with us, and she pretty much rules the roost. She is very strong on compliance and reporting and the analysis for the portfolios. So you have a broad range of market experience, and we work always as a team. So even though everybody doesn't have the same opinions, the same market views, because we work in a bullpen environment, because we can pull all those ideas together then we do so and we get a good mix of information. Also, because that independence helps us to hit every variety in the market. Our philosophy hasn't changed over those 20 years. We're very much focused on the client. We're very much working with our clients, and we don't have any discretionary accounts. They, for all intents and purposes, they might be, but I believe that public funds have to be non-discretionary because we are constantly communicating with our clients, talking to them not only about the market, but more importantly about their cash flows. What do they need? How are the cash flows changing? How are the risk tolerances changing with the various boards and commissions that change over the period of time? And so we are looking at them and working with them on a regular basis. One of the things that we focus on and that Chase and Justin are very strong on are the analytics for the individual portfolios. We have full-blown cash flow and portfolio analytics for every one of the portfolios and all of the sub-portfolios so that we can tear those apart, look at them, adapt to changes, and work with our clients to make sure that they're using the types of market alternatives that are important to them. Because, of course, that has changed many times over the period, too. We have a very disciplined approach. We're very strong on compliance, and we provide a lot of additional compliance control for our clients, making sure that their policies are in place, making sure that they have everything that they need for compliance to the law and everything that they need for compliance to their committees and their boards. And the way we operate is very much a disciplined approach. We work with the cash flow, we work with the information from the clients, and then we bring those together. But we are not traders, per se. We're investors. Although we like to take a very proactive approach to all of the portfolios, and I think you'll see that in the performance that we've been able to get. But for instance, we're always going back and reminding people and working with people and reevaluating. We try to make a regular communication with every client. We have a very strong fiduciary responsibility, and we make sure that we are working with the clients in that involvement constantly. We operate slightly different than a lot of investment advisors, and that's because we see ourselves as extended staff. I was thinking driving up today because we served the VRA from 2001 through 2008. And during that time, we did the banking, it seemed like many more times, but we at least did the review and the evaluation and the bidding of your banking twice. And we had, when we first started, and I think John probably remembers this, all of the cash collection that was very erratic throughout the system. And we worked with you, knowing your cash flows and knowing your needs, in order to get those to a streamlined position so that the money was flowing into the portfolio as effectively as possible. So there's a constant communication that we like to have with our clients, and a very disciplined approach as we take it, take that information and turn it into services. Our services, again, very conservative, but very proactive. We are active in the markets, obviously, with $5.5 billion. We're in the markets all the time. And therefore, we see where value is. We're talking about that value all the time, and we can bring it to the various portfolios that we operate with. The reporting is very strong to us. It comes along with the compliance part of it. So we will work initially with and set up reporting that you need. We do standard for us is monthly reporting, and then quarterly reporting, and the GASB report. We also, because we work with so many bond funds with clients throughout the state, we have worked with many, many arbitrage calculating firms, with many bond attorneys to make sure that they have the information that they need. So the reports that you're getting right now look very familiar to me because we use the same system as your current advisor. There wouldn't be any transition there. although we spend a lot of time initially making sure that those reports are tailored and customized to whatever you, the board, the committee wants to see, as well as the detail that's necessary for the staff to see on an ongoing basis. Another thing that's very big right now, that is a big point to all public entities throughout the United States, we find it, but particularly here in Texas because of the changes in the law in 2011, is collateral. And the fact that the BRA needs control of their collateral and the pricing of that collateral and the reporting of that collateral, because it's not a set procedure as it used to be. So the collateral monitoring and pricing is a very important service that we give as part of our service. And then along with that, the brokers and dealers, the compliance files on the brokers and dealers, the performance charts that we do on the brokers and dealers to make sure that you're getting the best value with the best brokers that we can get for you. The performance, I looked back from 2001 through 2008 to look at the performance, and I had to put that on there because it's so nice to see something left of the decimal point. And so the performance over those years averaged on the total portfolio almost 1.5 percentage points better than your benchmarks, and for the reserve funds, which were quite different in how they were managed, 2.4. And currently, performance-wise, we're running about 40 to 60 basis points above the benchmarks for all of our clients. And a lot of that goes and it goes from the use of different markets and looking at the changes. I think right now you have a big challenge, as does every portfolio, in that we're looking at rates changing. It may not be quick. It may be quicker than we think, depending on your view of the economics of the situation. But I think the strategies here have to change, and that's where experience comes in. Knowing what's changing. Right now with the strategy, with the rates going up, we're looking very much in our different portfolios at step-ups so that we're moving up with the rates. We're looking at municipal bonds and governmental bonds that can be short. We're looking at different alternatives for helping the portfolios perform. And that's really a big part of what an advisor can and should be doing for you. The strategies that I mentioned there, all of them, we have to look at diversification to make sure that you don't have risk focused in any one point. And I think over the last couple of years, you've seen it very, very clearly because in 08 and 09 to 10, you didn't have the kind of, you had a lot of concern. You had rates dropping and the alternatives of collateralized funds in banking, where we use a lot of money market funds right now to get clients at a 30 instead of an 03 in the pools, using the collateralized funds from the banks. But then as the banks changed and didn't need or want any more money, then we changed to municipal use. So it's a constantly changing strategy. It's one that's born of knowing what all of the sectors in the market are. Mortgage-backed securities occasionally, obviously not a very good situation right now. So I pulled out some performance charts to give you an idea. This happens to be a very large ISD, independent school district, and the reason I brought this one was that you can see that it starts back in February 13. They have been totally liquid, so you need an advisor who can start, get a handle on their cash flow, and bring the portfolio up immediately. So the performance is the dark bars versus their benchmarks in the red. And then this one's slightly bigger than you, about $138 million. But the average yield above their portfolio benchmark has been, since the February of 13, a 0.38, which has netted them about $500,000. This is another way to look at it. This is a much larger, this is a city here in Texas with over $1 billion in it. But what I wanted to show you here was the consistency of the performance. That it's as the, and this goes back to 07, as the markets have changed, as alternatives have changed, as different strategies have changed over that period, we've been very consistent with them. And we've also brought them into a securities lending position, which overall has earned them an additional $13 million every year. The third graph that I wanted to show here, again, the consistency. This is a city here in Texas, and it's very close to the size of BRA with $91 million. And this one goes back to 07, and over that period of time, averaging a half a percent or 5.526 over the performance of their benchmarks. The benchmarks on all of these are pretty much the same. We really advise that the benchmarks be reflective of your cash flow and reflective of your markets that you're involved in. So all of them use the comparable maturity treasuries. Another thing that the firm does, and has been a very strong bulwark of the firm ever since it started, is education. That's partly because I was the co-author of the Public Funds Investment Act and the Public Funds Collateral Act, so it's part of me to make sure that nobody gets in trouble with the act and what we opened up for the markets for all of the public entities in Texas. But we have expanded this over the years. We do tremendous amount of training for the educational service centers, which are all the independent school districts for GFOA nationally. I do all their regional investment and training and advanced training and banking training for GFOA. We've written, among the team and myself, several publications. We're on our third book now in a series of the for the Public Treasury Institute of D.C., which will be a series of 10 books on public investing. So it's very much, we bring that to all of our clients. As you probably know, all of your investment officers have to have training every 2 years, 10 hours. So we do targeted investment training for our clients and also regional ones. For instance, we have a large number of clients down in the Corpus Christi area. So we get them all together and we just do their training for them. And again, in Austin and up in the Fort Worth area. All of our training is CPE qualified, so that makes all of the CPAs very happy. We hope, and I think we know that, and hopefully we can express to you that we can meet BRA's needs. Obviously, you want and need performance. You need safety and risk tolerance. You need a risk control. You need to make sure that the investment officers, investment advisors are in full compliance with the policy at all times. We use on our trading desk the compliance sheets for every client so that before any trade is done, what they are allowed to invest in, what their win, their maximum maturities are, who their brokers are. There's a full compliance check all the way through. The independence on the transactions, I really can't emphasize that enough, because the independence, by being an independent firm, you're sure that the competitive bidding is done. We have set up in every contract, as we used to with BRA, make sure that you get individual confirmations from the brokers so that you see exactly what was done. It's not brought through somebody's brokerage desk. It is pure and clean audit trail, so that we're communicating, you're communicating, everybody is getting the right information, and you can see that competition, which is so critical to public investing, is done on a regular basis. We do work with the operating funds, bond funds, reserve funds. We have one or two foundations that we work with that are a little bit different in higher ed. But all of these come down to a client-central, making sure that we have good ongoing meetings and communication. What we try to do with every client, and would with BRA, of course, is set up the initial meeting so that we know exactly what your cash flow needs are, the difference risk tolerances for the different funds, reserve funds a little different than operating funds and so forth, bond funds and the needs on those bond funds. And quite interestingly right now, I think your bond funds are going to have a nice surprise where we've worked with the the tax reform legislation and looked at it very carefully about being able to get a little bit back for your arbitrage at this point because of the tax exempt rates being so low also. So we like to set up regular meetings. We have regular conference calls. We try not to bother anybody. If they don't want to be bothered, email's nice for that, so we can get that communication going. But we're always there. We don't even have voicemail because the rule in the firm is that nobody gets put in voicemail. And we're there, and all members of the team are well familiar with all the portfolios, so they can answer questions or get that answer as soon as possible. We like to discuss market conditions because we're all economics majors, and we're in the market all the time, so our conversations are up to the minute, and we think we have a really good view because of our independence on the different market situations. Internal constraints and mysteries, of course, very, very important for you. And then a procedural review and the recommendations for trade. You probably read in the RFP where we go out and look for value. We always talk, and that's the non-discretionary part of what we do, go out and talk to our clients, make sure that they feel comfortable with it. The education side is that we want to bring whatever information they need on those particular securities to them. And then ongoing meetings and on the brokers and dealers, the quarterly meetings, the compliance and so forth, and presentations to boards and committees, plus education of the staff itself. So I see my time is just about up. It's trying to watch your clock for you. But I'd be glad to answer any other questions. We do appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you, and we would very much like to serve you as your investment advisor.
I have a question, Linda. Thank you for that presentation. You're a relatively small firm. Is that correct? And who would your number two be if something happened to you, or your number two or three, or your succession?
Justin is my right hand. He's been with me for about 5 or 6 years, and so he's very familiar, and I have beaten my philosophy into his okay. head repeatedly. Good. Yes. And we also, Chase is coming along. Chase, in adding Chase, and we have had turnover in the last year, in bringing Chase on, I looked for a long time with Justin and with Chase to make sure that there are people that had the same backgrounds, the same public service and so forth. Today's an exception. We don't usually travel together. I'm the one that's out talking to clients and to boards and commissions a lot. But second would be Justin and then Chase, and I think probably in the next year or so we'll add another manager also. Ricky is very important to us because Ricky is our compliance and reporting expert, and she is hands-on in everything. And we actually sit in a bullpen situation so that we all are familiar with all of the clients. And yes, we are a small firm, and it's actually, I like it that way. I don't like a lot of people sitting around with nothing to do, and that's just problems. An example, when I was the chief investment officer for the state of Texas, I had about $20 billion, and I had 12 people to go all the way through the trust company into all the way through trading, reporting, and into the Fedwire system. So you spend the money, as many companies have done over the last several years. We have, from the beginning, spent the money on our systems, our backups, our disaster planning, separate systems off the grid, off the same electrical grid. So I feel very comfortable with that, and quite frankly, I'm glad we're small because we can tailor what we do, and I think we can respond to it properly.
Thank you.
You said you co-authored the, and I can't get name the act, but it was...
The Public Funds Investment Act.
Okay.
When I was city treasurer in Fort Worth, and Corrine Steger, who was the cash manager over in Dallas, and, you know, two women that were... were told that they couldn't do it, and it had been trained before. In fact, I called it the girls' law for a long time. And we got it through big support from my mayor, Mayor Bolin, Bob Bolin, at the time. And Fort Worth supported us to make sure that we opened up the markets to not only home rule, but every public entity. And then 2 years later, we went back and established the pools, at the beginning of the pools. And then also in 2 years, the Public Funds Collateral Act, which had never been formalized.
What was the session, the legislative session, when that act was passed?
Initially,
quite a while back.
It was 1987.
I got a question.
89 was when the collateral
was passed. I've got a question. What are your thoughts on the two bigger pools, Tex Pool, of course, being the largest, and then Logic, and then some of these others that are coming along?
Yeah.
You know, they were designed for overnight liquidity, but they haven't been operating like that.
No, they haven't.
There's $12 or $13 billion in Tex Pool. You know, of course, it's paying virtually nothing. Three to five, prime place five.
Yeah.
It's five today, but I mean, that's virtually nothing. And yet, all that money is in something that it really wasn't designed for.
Well, I ran Tex Pool for several years, so.
You'll be biased then, so.
No, actually, I'm very worried with some of the pools.
I'm sorry?
I'm very worried with some of the pools. And I think you saw it a year and a half ago. A lot of problems in Europe with the banks. It's almost a mirror image of what we have with the financial institutions in Europe right now because of the stresses on it and because their banking system is set up. You had pools, not Tex Pool, but one of the pools that was about 12 basis points above, might have even got higher than that, 12 or 15 above the other pools. Well, there's a reason for that. And when we looked into it for our clients, and we tend to not use the pools very much for our clients, we found out that 75% of that portfolio was in European financial institutions, commercial paper. And in the pools here in Texas, I work all over the United States in teaching for GFOA and working on the cash committee at GFOA. Most states have one or two. And what has happened in Texas is that the free market is alive and well, and what's happened is that the competition has gotten really tight for it. First of all, people don't think, they think in Tex Pool that they're collateralized or they're insured. They are not. So it's just become kind of a lazy liquidity kind of thing. And the competition has been, and you've seen the changes in the last 3 or 4 years in legislation. Very dangerous situation because we've had to pull them back into remembering that they're 2A7 pools. But we have pools that are money market funds. We have pools that are strictly called a pool, but what they're doing is not providing DVP to brokered CDs, and they're calling it a pool. So if you belong to it, here's your list of what's in the pool. That's not a pool situation. And that's not a situation where they're watching for the client and for the credit considerations or in brokered CDs or mergers and acquisitions, which are so critical for safety. I really think we've gone past. And, you know, you obviously hit a hot button here, but, you know, we have pools that will come to people and say, oh, you think you're safe at a $1 net asset value, I'll offer you 50 cent net asset value. It's twice the risk. Great marketing tool. And so, as I said, I mentioned that we use a lot of money market accounts for our clients. They want some of the flexibility for the pool, especially when tax money's coming in. But we use money market accounts which are running from 20 basis points to 75 basis points for our clients. So that's where we put our liquid money. We don't want to use the. I love the pools. I think they're great for small entities, but they can't. There's a danger there, too. There's very much a danger.
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I think you see another danger coming up, too, and that is the and you saw the SEC act towards it, and that is the municipal advisors rule. And you know, how many times did I say independence? I say it in my sleep, because you can't be the FA, the underwriter, and the investment advisor. You just can't do that and not expect some conflict between. And that's why we have had many offers being bought by banks or other institutions, and I've always turned them down because I think that's so important for both.
Yeah, the smaller municipalities, that's been the case all over the state.
Yeah.
The same parties, all of it.
Oh, yeah. Texas is one of the reasons that the municipal advisory rule came into play this year and started up in July.
Thank you. Anybody have any other questions?
I have one question. Linda, obviously our portfolio, as you know, is in primarily collateralized CDs and stuff right now. Well, where do you see, if you were the advisor, where would you see that portfolio going here?
We moved the portfolios away from collateralized CDs. They were good for a while, particularly up until 2011. But since 2011, where it's becoming very difficult, the banks don't want the money anymore. That's just, I mean, luckily BRA is a great name and you can get some good collateral. But they, with the new regulations, which I think are a major change coming on, you've seen, who is your bank right now?
BBVA Compass.
Interesting.
Well, Comerica is where we have a lot of our CDs. Our depository is BBVA Compass. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Actually, our largest money is with Comerica through our CDs.
Right. But what's happening with the new SEC regulations and the Basel III Accords is that you're seeing a lot of banks pull back, and they don't want the money. They can't afford it because if they're issuing brokered CDs or CDs, they fall into a lower tier. And so, you know, Wells Fargo is a perfect example of that. They're turning down banking contracts because of the collateral that has to be pledged. And they're turning down the banking services contracts because they don't want that collateral to take them to a lower tier for the regulators. And so I think that the collateralized CDs, you know, are nice if you can get the rates, but I also think that if you have a tremendous amount of money sitting in one bank, that's never a good situation. The diversification is real important. We've been using a lot of municipals. It's hard because I have some strict we have some strict restraints on it. We will touch California paper. We will touch Michigan paper, Illinois. Pennsylvania's a little iffy right now, in Florida.
Jersey.
And in Jersey. We won't touch revenue bonds, because we want the stream coming from the taxing ability of the entities. But by using municipals, we've been able to diversify the portfolios. We're now just starting to see some of the treasuries and agencies come back, not so much treasuries. But agencies, because I like the step-up ability of the agencies. I like the Fannies and Freddies that are still under full conservatorship of the U.S. government, so they're still full faith and credit. But they're going to step up with the rates, and you get that bump in the front end for the lockout period, which has been tremendous for us. I mean, you're looking at a 1%er now.
Have you advised or seen your entities use the financial institutions use the Federal Home Loan Bank letter of credit as a guarantee?
He hits all my hot buttons. That's becoming a situation that's going to be detrimental to everybody. I think because of the Basel Accords. The Basel Accords are changing the restrictions and the registration of the collateral. So the banks, because it's less expensive for them, it's easier, they don't have to do the communications back and forth with the entities, they're going to the letter of credit. Letter of credit, obviously, statutorily is authorized, no problem with it, except two things. You don't have, let's say BRA doesn't have the right to know what is backing that collateral. It could in many cases be the credit of the FFEHFLB, or it could be the credit of the bank. So I'm backing my, I'm trusting my collateral on the credit of the bank that's pledging it to me. Does it make sense? Does it make me feel warm and fuzzy there? Plus, who owns the home loan bank?
Let me ask you this. If it's a financial letter of credit, that is the direct beneficiary would be the depository. So that, that relationship would be directly with FHLB.
Right.
Based upon FHLB's credit.
And FHLB is the second big part that I don't like is who owns FHLB. FHLB in Dallas is a banker's bank. It's owned by the member banks. So if you have more and more public entities going for the collateral from the letter of credit backed by the home loan bank, which is actually the credit of the financial institutions, I mean, you're not talking about Federal Home Loan Bank Washington. You're talking about Federal Home Loan Bank Dallas. So it's just, it's, I think it's safe. I think it's fine. Many of our clients have had to go that way because otherwise they can't get a bank. BBVA is one that pushes very, very strongly for letters of credit. But if they have the alternative, I guess I've just been in the market long enough that I, you know, I saw banks failing right and left in the 80s. I saw them failing right and left in the 90s. And I want to have a security for my clients that they can take to market, that we can protect, that we can hold. Because one of the things that bothers me about the letter of credit is a letter of credit or any kind of collateral is good for you for an event of default. So the law says event of default. An event of default is a bankruptcy, but there are many other times that there are events of default. I can remember one that working through a situation with a large school district down in the Houston area, and their event of default was that the bank decided they would not do the reporting and get what they had promised, and they were very reluctant to release the information on their collateral. So we talked with them, worked with them, and then called an event of default. If I call an event of default and I have a Bank of New York as the custodian, I know that collateral is immediately protected. They step in, they become my bailee. There's no question about what's going to happen there. But if I'm arguing for against BBVA or Amegy or anybody else who's using a letter of credit, who am I arguing with? I have to make sure that the bank owns the bank who's my custodian, and it's not a bankruptcy situation. It's an event of default on default of the contract terms. So it gets a little bit hazy on the whole thing. And it probably is going to change. You're probably going to have to use more letters of credit for public entities because of the Basel Accords. But
because of what?
The Basel III Accords.
What's that?
This is the third time that the Basel group, it's Basel's name for Basel, Switzerland, where I went to school, so nice tie there. But it is the global regulators and that set the parameters for credit for all of the banking industries across the world. And they then are taken by the individual countries and toned down to exactly what they need for their particular banking situation. So the Basel Accord has lifted many, many credit considerations for all of the banks. And that's why, for instance, they don't want to collateralize as much because they want to keep their money in the higher tier. It's not pledged out. Because as soon as it's pledged out, it becomes a lower tier credit for them, and it takes it off their balance sheet. So they've got regulators saying, you better keep your balance sheet happy. They've got regulators saying, I've got to drop it back down. So it's a major thing. It's also ugly because it kind of reminds me of Dodd-Frank, and we're not sure what's in there. And it'll probably be years before we know the whole story on Basel and how it affects the bank. But Wells Fargo is a perfect example of that.
What do you think of Too Big to Fail and how Dodd-Frank hasn't worked?
You know, I think Dodd-Frank worked a little bit in that like everything else that's going on, it raised our considerations and our awareness of credit. I have always been a Glass-Steagall girl. I don't like the walls that came down on Glass-Steagall. I would like to see that separation, because I think you do get to the point where a failure of one of our, maybe Chase or Bank of America, are very systemically dangerous to the banking industry. So I think you can get too big to fail, because the regulators won't let it happen because of the shock to the political and to the economic views. And let's face it, the political comes in there. And but I think some of Dodd-Frank has pulled that back a little bit. If we could just get Glass-Steagall back in and separate insurance and some of the other banking industry functions from the pure banking, I think it would help a lot. I think it might have made some of the smaller banks, and you see it in Texas a lot. A lot of bankers who left the banking industry in the 80s and early 90s, and then they're coming back and setting up independent banks. So you have a lot of independent commercial business banks. They don't help the public sector very much, but I think that's a strength here in Texas that I see in other states also.
I've got one other, just real quick. You hit upon it, but BBVA, our current depository, is looking like they may want to change some of the pricing of our current agreement and things like that. How would you help us in resoliciting or evaluating that situation, our depository situation? How do y'all go about helping clients with that?
As I mentioned, and I put in the RFP, everything we do comes as part and parcel of being your advisor. So I do a tremendous amount of bank consulting. I think you know that. I'm doing some huge entities right now. But I probably do 40 different banking bids and evaluations every year. So those I'm constantly then working with them to evaluate and make sure that those fees are the same. That would be part and parcel of what we do, just like all of the policy compliance, internal controls. We do a lot of internal control work for clients. I'm just finishing up, well, I think we're getting near the end, with Dallas County and the city of Minneapolis and a very large county up in Minnesota. And it's the same thing. Managing the money just comes as part and parcel of help for every aspect of treasury. We do see ourselves as your extended staff. We see ourselves as an open service for you for controls, for procedures, policies, and banking. Banking is a critical part of what we do, and is always going to be. So it's something that you need to have somebody who's in that market all the time, and we are. We're doing bids all the time. Obviously, the banks usually hate me, because we'll hold their feet to the fire and get the best rates, and we'll structure the bids in such a way that you will get the best rates.
Who do you see that might be interested in our this market, you know, in our market and our business and stuff right here, from a depository standpoint, that you've seen recently?
I would have thought that Wells Fargo would be a very big player. I've done the city of Waco here just a few years ago, and they were coming in very strong. It depends now how you structure and whether you'll take that letter of credit or not. They have been very strong over the last 5 years, because they took their position to say, we're going to give you the best ECR. And so since they had ECRs that were at the 3 years ago at 1% earnings credit rate, and that the money that you leave in the bank to pay on a compensating balance basis, they were running at 1%. They're down to about 70. On an account like yours, I wouldn't be surprised if they'd still have 70. And that's going to serve you well for another year and a half. I don't think Bank of America is going to be a player. They're pretty much pulling out of the public entity space. But you have Citi, who, once again, depending on their regulatory problems right now, but they've been coming on pretty strong. And so you could get a really nice bid from Chase or from Wells Fargo, I would think. Obviously, those services are tremendous, and You'd have to compare them with BBVA, but I think you'd see a favorable.
From what you know of us, do you see any of the independent banks as being capable of providing? I'm talking from a service standpoint.
You know, you don't have as huge a volume, and I'm hoping that you've gone more and more electronics. And so you don't actually have the volume that a city like Waco has to deal with. Because they've got park and rec. They're dealing with cash. We're having to work smart safes for them. You don't have the volume of individual payments coming in through courts and police and everything. So I think maybe some of the independent banks might be able to serve you as long as they give you the reporting that you need. I think they could serve you very, very well. And now's the time to do it, because they're still a little hungry.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody have anything else? Thank you, Linda.
Thank you. Whether we see you again or not, we will.
Okay. Thank you. Take a 5-minute break.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.